Welcome back, everyone. And Tu Bishvat Higia, Chaga Ilanot. As a matter of fact, it's always on the coldest day of the year here in Boston, it seems, over the last number of years. But it's, of course, one of these minor holidays that is a harbinger of spring and in the land of Israel. And Tu Bishvat, of course, is well known to some of you, but it really talks to some important ways of seeing the world. So I'm going to just start with talking about where it began. It began, if you recall, with trees. Trees. Right at the beginning, there were at least two well-known trees. Right? The tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And according to our mythic structure, Adam and Eve ultimately choose the tree of knowledge of good and evil over the tree of life, which helps them, if you will, on their journey, or the human journey, if you will, the human journey into the world, out of the Garden of Eden. And as my blessed teacher, Reb Zalman, says, we shouldn't see it as an expulsion from the garden. We should see it more as graduation from the garden, graduation from kindergarten, and moving into the world. And of course, it's fraught with all kinds of meanings, and we'll spend a little time with that and see how it can fit into our thinking, our practice, etc. So the first thing I wanted to say was that it was never seen as a holiday. It was in the Mishnah, which is of course our first code of Jewish law and Jewish practice. It's mentioned only that it's one of the four Rosh Hashanahs. There are four Rosh Hashanahs, and we also know that trees. The Rosh Hashanahs include, of course, Rosh Hashanah and the beginning of Cheshvan, the beginning of Tishrei when we celebrate Rosh Hashanah, and the beginning of Nisan, the festival of spring, the month in which Passover comes. So that's the only mention of it. We also have a mention in the Torah, in Sefer Vayikra, that the fruit of a newly planted tree, the fruit of a newly planted tree should remain untouched for 3 years. And in the fourth, all the fruits should be offered up as an offering. And it could be enjoyed by the farmers on the fifth year onward. I've talked to a few treologists, I guess they're not called treologists, arborists, that's the word, arborists, and they said it's not uncommon for trees in the first years not to be able to yield their best fruit, and that it does take time for that to happen. Tu B'Shvat has played a role both mystically in our tradition as well as practically. It became a symbol of the planting of trees. And when the State of Israel was the first, or the meeting of the first parliament, there was the Knesset, it was in February 14th of 1949, and it was indeed on the holiday of Tu B'Shvat, and I'm sure it was done with purpose. So the Knesset, before they assembled, went and they planted trees in honor of the holiday, and planting trees became a trademark of the Zionist and religious revival that was taking place in the land of Israel, of Jews returning to the Adama, returning to the earth, which of course is where the name earthling comes from, or human comes from, Adam. So it was sort of a recapitulation. But as I said, it's not in the Bible itself. It's part of a sort of a fiscal year that the month before Passover was the calculated the reigns, R-E-I-G-N-S, the reigns of kings, the one in Elul, when animal tithes were calculated, our Rosh Hashanah, which falls in the month of Tishrei, and this, a new year for the trees, which takes place as it will starting tomorrow night. And there were all kinds of questions about when this should be, and of course the Talmud finally agrees that it should be on the 15th day. Another aspect of Tu B'Shvat is that, if you recall, on Sukkot, we ended Sukkot with the eighth day of assembly before people returned to their homes from the pilgrimage festival. And there was a prayer said, called, we still call it, the Tfilat HaGeshem, the blessing over rain. And we hoped, and that was what the Middle East at that time needed, Palestine at that needed, that there would be a lot of rain, heavy rain, after Sukkot, and it would hopefully subside by Tu B'Shvat, when softer dew rain, misty rain would come that would not wash away the plants, because we hope that by Passover, by the month of Nisan, we would see the beginning of the barley harvest, and that's really an important part for creating the sustenance for the farmers, their animals, etc. So we have all of these things. And then something happened in the 16th century, which for us is still a contemporary time, not as long, as old as the Bible, of course. And Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Ari, which he's called the Lion, reestablished the significance of the holiday of Tu B'Shvat with a mystical ceremony infused with tremendous symbolism. It's known as the Tu B'Shvat Seder. For many years, we had had the Seder at TBZ, and I think we'll have it again this coming week. And over the years, the custom is increasingly popular with both Sephardic and Ashkenazi communities everywhere. And similar to the Passover Seder, wine is drunk, four cups of wine, and fruits are eaten, and there's references made to the spiritual attributes of the seven species that are grown in the land of Israel, as mentioned in the book of Deuteronomy. Wheat symbolized kindness, barley as strength, grapes as kindness, figs as perseverance, pomegranates as humility, olives as foundation, and dates as royalty. And these attributes were said to be shared by God and the human spirit. And you notice that is can be represented by the seven lower spheres on the mystical tree of life. And then in more contemporary times, Tu B'Shvat has been embraced as a Jewish day of environmental and social activism, with initiatives based on conservation, recycling, etc. And it really remains an important day for that consciousness. And of course, it's quite possible that the modern Tu B'Shvat, the ecologically oriented one, was a result of Arbor Day, which is now known as Earth Day. It may have been an inspiration, you should know that Arbor Day was established in 1872, and of course it might have been an influence on that as well. So trees, let's think of trees for a moment again, and as you know, in every tradition, the tree symbolizes a great deal for us. Now, it's interesting, in the, as I say, in the Chumash, in the Chumash, in the five books of Moses, there's mention of how one should behave when one is creating a siege against the city, and one is, according to this passage in the Torah, one is not permitted to destroy the fruit trees. Those who are not fruit trees can indeed be used for wood in order to create whatever they needed to enforce the siege. But fruit trees are not supposed to. And then there's a little message there in the book of Devarim saying, because man is like the field, the tree of the field. A man is like, and there it's a very complicated verse. And it can be understood in so many ways, and has been interpreted in so many ways. The tree, of course, in our tradition, again, is the tree of life. The Torah is considered the Eitz Chaim, the tree of life. But there are also trees that you have to be aware of, beware of, and that is the Asherah, which was a planting of a tree, we're not sure, which was used in pagan rituals. And we know many pagan cultures, the tree became the center of their religious direction, the Druids and others. And these trees were to be cut down. And they were, because there's a certain fascination with trees. I am a bit of a tree lover myself. I love trees when they have leaves. I love trees when they don't have leaves. As a matter of fact, when they don't have leaves, and you have a very wonderful tree nearby, take a look at it and notice the shape of the tree and its branches. And then, as someone told me, look at the top of your hands below your fingers and you'll see a very similar shape. And then there's all kinds of theories about fractals, I won't get involved, and that somehow there is a natural formation, and the tree, in a sense, symbolizes that nature. So what did we do in order to embrace the tree and yet to make sure it was used in what we considered a proper way? We created the menorah. The menorah is really the domestication of the tree, taking it from outside, bringing it within the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and again into every synagogue. There's no synagogue that doesn't have some sort of symbolic menorah in it. We have it on TBC, we have it on our ark. A menorah. And of course, the tree in many traditions, I was checking out that there are Buddhist perspectives on trees as well, of course, as we would expect. And there's a certain sense of the Buddha nature of plants itself. And there's a lot of symbolic importance, again, also for trees in the Buddhist tradition, in other traditions as well, and certainly in our tradition. Of course, there's a famous sacred Bodhi tree underneath which the Buddha sat and taught. There's also, this was a sacred place. It actually is the source of the word Buddhist, or Bodhi. Buddhist comes from Bodhi, which basically means to awaken, right? To be a Buddhist is to be an awakened one. And there's other words and not that I'm very familiar with. Moksha, the release of freedom, Puranas, there's all kinds of stuff, and I don't want to get into all of that because there's so much. We will always, in our tradition as well as all traditions, see that this idea of man and tree as being sort of connected to each other by seeing how we too strive to go up as high as we can in our tradition, the connection with God. And the tree also, in order to be able to reach its heights, must have a very, very broad network of roots in order to get to the height. So this idea of being rooted in the earth and then allowing ourselves to emerge into a growing, if you will, developed structure with many, many branches. I often tell a story, and before I open it up to our discussion, about how you understand the relationship to trees and how it's a very helpful thing to think about, one of the kids at TBC years ago said, Reb Moshe, you know, we just finished reading the Torah and we started reading it again. And he said, he's a clever little fellow, And he says, tell me the truth, Rabbi. Why do we have to read it again? We know the ending. Moshe's not going to get into the land next year. We know it's going to stop. And I said, well, the Torah is an Eitz Chaim. It's like a tree. Matter of fact, we call the handles of the Torah that we lift it the Atzei Chaim, the short life. So I said, you know, with a tree, every time the same thing happens every year, but the rings grow. Every year it's the same thing, but the rings grow. And it grows and it grows, and our Eitz Chaim, because it's been around for thousands of years, now has thousands of rings. So the clever young man says to me, Rabbi, what do you need a tree that thick? I mean, is it like the sequoia? We're going to drive through it with our cars. What do you need something that big? So I thought quickly, and I said, well, you see, the tree is broad and wide and round in order to sustain all the branches that are going to emerge from it. And the branches are going to be voluminous. They're going to be so voluminous, and people on one side are going to have one perception of the tree and a perception of life, and people on the other side are going to have another perception of life, but they're all going to say we come from the same trunk. And I said, that's what can ultimately unify us, is realizing what our source is. And our source is that we come from the same place and we have the same roots. No matter where you are on a branch, your tree has the same roots. And I find that encouraging, the fact that we have this image of what can divide us, but also what can unite us. What tradition is that every one of us has a branch on that tree. And we're hoping, as we just heard in the Tu B'Shvat song, that it would begin to blossom. And we wish all of us to begin to blossom. We hope all of us can rise up, particularly from the depths of the frozen we are in now. That we have this marvelous harbinger of spring, which I think we all have somewhere embedded in ourselves. This is going to end, and things will change. So this idea of striving towards heights of the spirit, which is what the Rabbi Isaac Luria wanted us to do. He said, "Look, there are four different levels of of perception, four different." The levels of our activity that are going on all at the same time, our doing in the world, our, if you will, our imagination, our cognitive, if you will, capacities, and our capacity to, if you will, live a life that is on the branches, the top branches that will bring us close to our spiritual lives. This idea of the tree representing spiritual life, as I said, is found in many, many traditions. And always excites me about it is that in our practice, I believe the model of the practice, we may not talk about it explicitly, is to become rooted. We sit still. We are rooted. That's the point. We find our grounding. We find that we, many of my instructors over the years says, when your feet are on the ground, you are standing on everything that has come before you. That's the grounding, everything that has come before us. And we are rooted. And then we allow our minds to just keep going, like the breeze shakes the leaves, like the breeze. We don't try to control that. It's impossible. We look at the swaying of leaves. And what is wonderful about our group is that another interpretation of why man is like a tree is because it needs other trees. Trees don't live singly. They live around each other. And now we're learning all kinds of stuff. Maybe there's actually maybe trees are talking to each other in their own way, right? Through the root systems. We don't really know. But you need to have trees in order to create what? Protection from the sun, and also to have this capacity of, if you will, of understanding that all things ultimately are connected. So I find that Tu B'Shvat was really a wonderful opportunity to talk about rootedness and talk about how we necessarily don't have this rootedness as something that stops us, but the rootedness that gives us an impetus impetus to grow, to blossom, to strive. So I'm sure all of you have had a relationship with a tree one way or the other. Some of you may have climbed them and perhaps even fallen from them as a young person. But certainly there's something grand about trees, something marvelous about trees, something that excites the imagination. So beyond Joyce Kilmer, you know, the poem of trees that we all read as kids, we understand that it places, it is very essential in our thinking about what spirituality is, of how we still, as I say, have a long way to go, but we do have at least the confidence that our roots will not be uprooted, even though in the storms of life, as it is in the storms of nature, trees do get uprooted. And it's a challenge, but trees come back. You know, I've been walking in the same place with my wife now for over 40 years, and we have seen trees uprooted and dying, and we've seen new trees starting to grow up. And every time that happens, you begin to say, oh, there's something about the natural life that we live in, and we sometimes feel apart from rather than a part of. And I'll leave that for now. And I'm sure there's a lot to say. So it's open, folks. Go for it.